The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 21st of January, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Carl Sterrett, Chief Executive Officer and Founder of Shield Therapeutics, STX is the ticker there. And Carl talks about the commercial progress of their lead product, Feraccru. Very interesting this. It's gone through all the trials, got a big deal with a European partner. So it's a very interesting listen. That's STX ticker there. Also on the podcast, Monday, of course. So Malky's on, oil and gas sector specialist, and he covers the following companies: Infrastrata, Trinity Exploration and Production, Jersey Oil and Gas, Hurricane Energy, Gannell Energy, Falcon Oil and Gas, and Victoria Oil and Gas. I also have, as always, two lists. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you can also see a plethora of articles on companies with news out like Redx Pharma, Keystone Law, Audioboom, and plenty of others. Check it out. It's voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Carl Sterrett, Chief Executive Officer and Founder of Shield Therapeutics. STX is the ticker there. Carl, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, I do this to every company that comes on, but you know, especially because you haven't been on before, could you give us a summary as to what Shield Therapeutics is all about, please?
Absolutely. So we are a specialty pharmaceutical business. So we develop products that are targeted at patients who may be being treated via a hospital physician, not necessarily an inpatient. Mm-hmm. And we have a product that is already approved called Feraccru, which is indicated for the treatment of iron deficiency, and it has an approval across the whole of Europe and Switzerland. And it's also currently going through the same process in the United States.
Okay, so it's called Feraccru. So what does it do then, Carl?
It's very simple. It's a replacement iron. So patients become anemic or iron deficient, either through excessive blood loss or the inability to absorb iron. And Feraccru is a little pharmaceutical that is able to replace that iron that the patient's either not absorbing or losing.
Yeah. And what's the market size of this? What's the potential here?
Really quite significant. So the market size at the moment is estimated to be about $2 billion a year. And that is split by volume, about 90% tablets, about 10% intravenous products. And by revenue, it's about 50% intravenous products, 50% tablets. So the tablets are all pretty much all generic, very cheap. But the problem is they have lots and lots of intolerance because of the way they work. Mm-hmm. Intravenous iron is effective in that you guarantee to get the iron into the patient. But you have to do it in a hospital setting. It's expensive. It's inconvenient for the patient. And most of all, there is a risk of a side effect called anaphylaxis, mm-hmm. Which is the type of thing you get from a bee sting or a peanut allergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So you've, as far as you're concerned in Europe, I mean, you already got commercial. You can start selling this already. So, and you've got a partner as well. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. So the drug is approved for the treatment of iron deficiency across the whole of Europe. That's about 40 million patients worth of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it is being commercialized by our commercial partner, Norgine. So they are a very well-respected mid-sized pharma company. They're actually a private business run out of Holland and the UK. But they have about 80 reps who are commercializing Feraccru for us in the UK and Germany, where it's already being reimbursed.
I see.
And we pitch it as a treatment because of the tolerance that Feraccru has, the benign profile of it. We pitch it as an alternative to intravenous iron. So if you're a patient mm-hmm. who cannot tolerate the existing oral therapies, Theracru now provides you with an option of not having to go to intravenous iron and stay on a pill, albeit a very different pill.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, this is very much the start. I mean, you say all clinical risk is out the way here because it's now commercial, but you're very much the start, is it, of the... So how long has it been in selling commercially for?
Yeah, so we started commercialising in mid-16 after the drug got approved. But obviously, we're a very small company and trying to raise capital. So we decided that we would seek a commercial partner. And as I said, so put it into context, as our biggest commercial team size, we had about 15 people starting to sell the drug, whereas Norgine already have about 80 people selling it. So as you can see, we're expecting you know, a much greater push on the drug now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, why, when are your next set of results out then?
So prelims out in early April. Mm-hmm. Although I think that's probably, as Norgine only took over, they only started commercialising the drug in December. I think that'll be obviously be too early to be able to draw any conclusions from their initial activities. But as we see their progress, obviously we'll update the markets. But yeah, we're very excited by their level of interest. This is now their lead product for their sales reps to sell. So yeah, very excited.
Yeah, and what about the US? What's happening there?
Huge opportunity. The world's biggest pharmaceutical market probably represents 30-35% of the global market. And Theracru is going through the final stages of that process in the US. So it's been submitted to the FDA for a new drug application, or an NDA. And FDA have gone through their initial stages of review and have issued us with what they call a PDUFA date, or the date they're going to let us know whether the drug is approved or not. And that will be the 27th of July. So, you know, the last 6 months and the next 6 months, really very, very significant for the company. With Norgine's agreement, where they paid us £11 million to get the rights to the product in Europe. Plus, they'll also be paying us up to another €54.5 million in milestones. And then on top of that, there are royalties of 25 to 40% on sales. And then obviously in the US, we have the approval date in the middle of the year. So, yeah, very exciting times for us.
Yeah, because, absolutely. So there's no problem with cash, and that's going forward. Lots of potential there. And I've got to say, you hold some stock in the company as well. So that's nice to see.
I do, yes. I own roughly just under 10% of the company, having set the company up, and I've invested as we've gone along as well. So I've always followed my own money.
Yeah. How did you come across this then? What, you know, the opportunity here, how did you come about this?
So I've got a long-standing history in the industry, probably 20-odd years experience now in the pharma sector, working for smaller and smaller companies. And I decided I'd set something up myself and went looking, and you have contacts and there are databases you can search. And eventually we came across a small company in the UK that had this asset. And I just saw, effectively, I had a light bulb moment. I saw the opportunity for the product and this very significant unmet medical need. Now, these patients don't die. You know, it's not an acute disease. They don't die overnight from it. They don't get rushed to hospital. But it has a huge level of morbidity in the patients. It causes a lot of inconvenience and a lot of adverse issues for patients. Mm-hmm. And I just saw that this product could really change that.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous. And just thinking, I mean, I don't know what the relationship is or how similar it is, but surely if it's passed, I mean, how far away can it be from not being passed in America if it's been passed in Europe? How similar are the regimes there, you know, the systems they use?
Well, they have the same set of rules. There's something called the International Harmonization Guidelines. So they're all supposed to work to the same general set of rules, but of course they all have their own opinions.
Yeah.
So it is a completely separate application, although it includes effectively the same data that was used in Europe, which got the drug approved in Europe and in Switzerland.
Okay, so there's a good chance that will also get accepted in there. And you know, and even if they have to come back to you on something, it won't be a sort of full knockback. It'll be inquiry. What happens there?
Yeah, it's an interactive process.
Yeah.
So they can send you questions as and when they feel like it. And as they go through different sections of the application, so there's manufacturing and quality and safety and efficacy and a whole range of sections to the application.
Yeah,
and they go through it in an orderly fashion and send you questions that you have to give their answers to as quickly as you possibly can. However, the whole process takes place within a 10-month period. And that's a US statute that they have to give you a response within 10 months, hence what they refer to as the PDUFA date, which for us is the 27th of July. I should say that it won't be the 27th of July because that is a Saturday.
Okay.
and I think also just for just sort of general consumption, clearly there's been a bit of turmoil in the US government over the last few weeks,
yep,
with a big shutdown. So it wouldn't surprise me if that there's a knock-on effect around some of the timings around these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what is it, would you say, for you, what's the next big sort of news, but next milestone you're hoping to achieve here, Carl?
So our next probably big piece of news will be our prelims. Mm-hmm. We also have another study that we are just in the process of completing on Feraccru, which is comparing Feraccru to one of the leading intravenous products. So that's more of a study to help with reimbursement. This is a drug that, you know, IV drugs are expensive, mm-hmm, and they're made up of, the costs are made up of both the cost of the drug itself, but also the very significant and costs of administration. Whereas Feraccru just has the cost of the drug. There's no cost of administration. Yeah. You don't have to be hospitalized. So we pitched the cost of Feraccru at about the same acquisition cost of IV, and therefore the idea is to save the payer, the hospitals, et cetera, all of the administration costs, free up hospital beds, et cetera. Yeah. So that data will help support the reimbursement of the drug, and we'll probably have that before the end of the first quarter. And then the really big one this year, clearly, is the US decision around approval of Feraccru for the US market.
Absolutely. Okay, well, one final thing, Carl. Whenever a company comes on the podcast, I ask them to give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on the page and add them to the watch list. And I include the top five most followed companies in the podcast every day. So if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the story here, but not following you, give them those three quick reasons, please.
So I think, first of all, we've got a fantastic asset. This is a drug that really should change the treatment paradigm for this very, very large patient population. And it should mean you can use the drug hopefully to prevent the need for intravenous iron. Mm-hmm. It's an enormous market opportunity, you know, 40 million patients in Europe, probably something similar in the United States. It's also a product that has protection, intellectual property protection, all the way out till 2035. And it's being commercialized by a fantastic partner. And dare I say it, this is a market opportunity that is worth hundreds of millions. Well, the market overall is $2 billion a year. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to take a huge slice of that to have a very significant commercial opportunity. Mm-hmm. And yet the company itself currently is valued at about 42, 43 million pounds.
Yeah.
So it feels to me like there's really quite a disconnect between the value of the asset and the valuation it's currently being given. But of course, I'm the CEO, aren't I? So,
yeah. Well, no, listen, we expect you to be a little bit biased, but that's why we always ask people to do their own research. But Carl, it's been good to have you on, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas sector specialist Malky. You're right, fella.
I'm very well indeed, Justin. Thank you, and you?
Yeah, not too bad. I can imagine, it's a bit of gas and oil has been consumed of late. It's getting a bit colder, isn't it?
Cool, my dear. Everything's going flat to the bush at the moment. It's one of those things that I said when I was sort of positive on a company called Infrastrata, which is going into development of gas storage in Northern Ireland, is that this time of the year when people realise that gas storage isn't such a bad idea. And I think when I first started talking about Infrastrata again, I've been looking at it for the last couple of years, actually, since the management changes. But the new management changes are very strong. And, if you remember last February, we had a day when it was touch and go as to whether there was enough gas coming into the country to heat the houses and the factories and everything else. And you would have made enough money in those 2 days trading the oil market if you'd had the gas to supply into the local markets, enough to make your profit for the whole year.
Wow. Yeah. But you know what?
So,
Yeah, I hold a bit of Infostrata. I've done very well for myself there. I mean, almost three times my money I've had on those. So I like them a lot.
It's only the beginning, to be honest. I mean, I was due to go and see them. Unfortunately, the company visit that they arranged was just for Christmas, and it came up at short notice because of various things, and I couldn't rearrange other things that I had on. But I think that they've done extremely good job there. Its finance are certainly sent by grants from the EU, which, as long as they get sorted, it will be okay. And they're raising the money, and they're doing the feed arrangements, everything else. They seem to be kicking on very well indeed. It's a stock I'd strongly advise your guys to have a look at.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? And I had John Wood, the CEO, on the podcast, and he said someone brought this project to my attention. This was before he was involved, and he said I travelled over to see the project there, and literally within a day I was buying shares in the company. I could see the potential, and I loved that. Yeah. And he's still been buying shares now, and he's really moved it along. You know, someone's complete opposite the old board that seemed to be getting nowhere very slowly.
That stock's interesting. I mean, Wood and Graham Lyon, who's come in as chairman, he's a very smart cookie as well, and they're doing very well. And as you say, they're putting money down. The previous management had actually kicked it on from one stage behind that, where they had really dreadful old management who were taking money and doing nothing.
Yeah.
And these guys, Lyon and Wood, are kicking on very nicely. And, I've always thought that, gas storage is pretty crucial. I mean, this country, we're taking our time to get gas out of the ground, but we still have to get it from Russia and Norway and Qatar and places like that. If we buy it, wherever we buy it from, in the summer and then use it in the winter, that seems like a common sense thing to me to do.
Absolutely, yeah. It is mad, really. We don't have that facility. Absolutely. Okay. Well, that's
in a nutshell, the oil and gas companies think that the government should pay as part of energy policy.
Yeah.
And the government have always said that something that the oil and gas industry should do. Never the twain shall meet. I think the infrastructure have done the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. If there's money to be made, someone will make it, And and it looks like there can be money made there. Cool. What else are you looking at, Margie?
Well, a number of things. One or two companies that haven't reported for a wee while, so we were getting a bit into a rut with some of them. But Trinity Exploration had their announcement last week. It's the time of year we get year-end trading and operational updates. In a month's time, we'll get all these companies reporting their results as well. But actually, to be honest, the year-end trading updates are pretty good because it's the first time we get an idea. Mm-hmm. Trinity, which obviously, as you know, is based in Trinidad, Trinity Exploration Production, TRIN, as I said in the blog last week, they've really knocked the lights out here. I mean, they've restructured this business. They had a good deal of problems 3 years ago. The management kept hung on in there. They're extremely, extremely good team of management there, led by Bruce Tingwall. And they've knocked the lights out in the last quarter because they've refinanced the whole business. So they're now fully funded for their exploration projects, and of course they brought on no fewer than six wells in the period in the last quarter, and of course this led, as you might expect, to a strong upswing in production. Quarter on quarter, it was up 17%. Year on year, it was up 14%. So that's doing well. Well, not just the eight new wells over the year. So obviously, it was focused very much on the last quarter almost. But that was because of the funding and so on. So all the wells on the eight wells, new wells on the air, but also all the things like the RCPs, the recompletions, workovers and reactivations of wells and swabbing of other stuff. So they really got going very strongly, Trinity. Mm-hmm. They've also done their first well as operator at the Trintes field with an RCP test there and on stream. And, of course, they're continuing the work on the field development plan for the TGAL field. That could be most exciting for them as well. Mm-hmm. So they've got they're in a very strong position. They've got 11.8 million of cash, and that doesn't include cash which is being held by Petrotrin, which is being has been restructured, and they'll get that some extra revenue back from them. And they've got so they're generating cash very nicely. They've got no debt, obviously. I think that I'm expecting this company to significantly increase. I've got looking at high margin production, good cash production, substantial growth. The company's on too low a rating for this good quality position they've got themselves into.
Yeah, so they're producing what? How much? It's 3,205 barrels of oil per day.
Yeah, and they're doing very well. They're increasing that all the time. You know, in that part of the world, the important thing is to not only continue to drill the wells that you do, obviously they're the most expensive ones, but to continue to recomplete and do workovers and drill. I mean, there's a shitload of wells in that neck of the woods. And they're in a very strong position now, so they're doing very well. It's like very high margin stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, Trinity is TRIN. What's next, Marky?
Next one is Jersey Oil and Gas, which is nice to be hearing something more from Jersey again. Jersey Oil and Gas announced last week that Equinor, that we used to know as Statoil, we've got an announcement there. I mean, we're waiting for Equinor to drill the Verbier appraisal. So Equinor announced that the West Phoenix rig, which is going to do that, is now moved into UK waters. It'll be the third well in a three-well program that they do for Jersey Oil and Gas. You can guess a month each, but so say March, April, maybe. But it's positive to know that they're on the cards. Jersey Oil and Gas have 18% of Verbier, which significantly undervalues their shares, actually, because on the original discovery, they said that there'd be 25 to 130 million barrels, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And this appraisal well is hoping to determine that range and a bit more, I would think. As I say, at current share prices, it doesn't give you anything for something going on there.
Yeah.
And I think that I would expect that to happen. And also, there's one other thing is that, I think that that there are plenty of other things in the block apart from Verbier. And if you remember last year, they announced that they would be doing a big 3D seismic over the whole area. Well, that data was delivered to them in December, and they're already interpreting it. That can be very positive as well. So I think there's plenty of upside, and Jersey Oil and Gas is going to come back into the news in the next couple of months.
Marvellous. J-O-G. Jog. Okay, what's next, Malky?
We're talking Hurricane very briefly. They announced this morning that they had a very slight problem on their hookup of the FPSO, the Ioka Mizu. Nothing to worry about here at all if you're a shareholder of Hurricane. Literally, the hookup operation was suspended after one of the buoy ropes got snagged. It's not the most difficult of operations running this, this converted supertanker above the two wells which have just got to be tied in. But you can't do it more than 2 meters of swell. And you can imagine what it's like off the west of Shetland at the moment. Yeah. So what they've done is they've decided to retire her temporarily back to the Cromarty Forth, where they keep the thing until it's ready to go. There's no equipment damage at all. Everything is fully intact, in their words. And very wise to just stand back and wait until the weather gets slightly better. Once it's all hooked up, it doesn't matter at all. So, going back to the Cromarty Forth is very wise. There's no point in causing further delays by trying to do something in the wrong conditions. The share price comes down at all. I saw it was down only a percent or so earlier on. If it comes down, people should buy it, because First Oil is still, we're well ahead of schedule here. there's absolutely no problem with what's going on. The target, obviously, first oil, first half of this year. I still think it'll be first quarter of this year. I reckon it's still probably one of the most attractive stocks in the sector.
Yeah. HUR ticker there. Yeah, who knows what the potential is there, because it's quite big, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Huge.
Yeah, okay. Marvellous. What's next, Malky?
We're talking Genel Energy, because Genel actually, last week, after we'd spoken on Tuesday, they announced a very positive trading update in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, obviously. Doing extremely well, throwing off cash big time with the wells that they drilled particularly in the second half of last year. Peshkabir wells doing very well indeed. But today they've announced that they're acquiring stakes from Chevron in two blocks in the same area in Kurdistan. They've taken the Sarta and the Karadag blocks. This gives them a bit of scope. It takes them down from it takes them up to 30% of the Sarta block, and they're paying 50% of the cost until they get a certain amount of crude through, which will cost them, they think, between up to $60 million by the end of next year. And in Karadag, they're going up to 40% and becoming the operator. This is more of an appraisal. There's been one well drilled on Karadag, and they're expecting to drill another one next year once they've had a good conversation with Chevron. Now, there's a number of good things here, but obviously it's sensible Genel are throwing off cash, mm-hmm. so no one wants to see too much cash funneling. Now, if we want to see some of that being used, and this is a good way of using it, it fits their capital profile perfectly. Of course, you know, Bill Higgs at Genel knows the Chevron people inside out. It will bring cash flow in as some cash flow comes back down at the end of in the next 2 or 3 years. It's a good commercial find. You know, that looks good commercially and technically. Chevron, a good partner to have. The ministry of the KRG government obviously trust Genel implicitly, which is good. It's an opportunity to significantly grow at very low risk. So just a thing that Genel should be doing.
Yeah, do you know what? Just looking at their cash balance here, they've increased it by $71 million for the first 6 months. Well, for the 6 months until June, and so they now have cash and equivalents of $233 million. So that's. Considering they are they're 570 million market caps, so they have plenty of cash there, haven't they?
Oh yeah, I mean the cash is, as you say, compared to the market cap, it makes it look very positive. And spending money in an area you know very well with someone like Chevron and the government is common sense. The two blocks are perfectly good and slightly different, which is good. The Sarta will give you production soon. From the very high quality wells, which are already, you know, ready to go, and of course in Karadag, it's an appraisal, and give you a chance to work that up this year, drill it next year, and use your money wisely.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Genel. Is that anything else, Malky?
Couple of quick ones there, because we haven't talked about Falcon for a while, mm-hmm. And of course they announced this morning. they are for the first time. Don't forget, there's been a two-year moratorium on fracking in Falcon, because if you remember, they've had for 1 minute it looked like there was going to be, you know, it was going to be all over in the Northern Territories, but Origin, who are their partners there, have always been absolutely determined that this is going to happen. It would be good to do this as well, because Australia is ironically for a country which has got huge oil and gas deposits offshore, and you know the west coast there, and everything down the east coast, all being exported. They're actually short of gas, in particular in Australia. So Origin have announced this morning that they have signed a contract for a well, and that means that they're going to be drilling as soon as the dry season starts or the wet season ends, which is normally, I think it's April. They'll be underway by June, and they are drilling two horizontal wells. They've got two horizontal wells to drill and to frack, and also the appraisal of the gas discovery they made at Velkerri. We looked at Falcon for a long time, and it looked very exciting. I mean, they're carried. There's no shortage of money. They've just been had a 2-year delay because this fracking moratorium, which has gone their way. I think that for those people who've been faithful and Falcon Oil and Gas, or looked at it before and thought, I'll come back to that, this is probably the time to do that, because you know, Origin, a very, very highly rated company, so they're in with a very good partner, and there's proven gas there, and there's a proven market for it. So, very, very confident that things are beginning to look up for Falcon.
Yeah, Fog. Cool. Anything else?
Fog. One more. Finally, over the years we've talked about Victoria Oil and Gas. So, from Fog to Vog.
Yeah.
But you notice that last week, I think that you know, I've mentioned a number of times things happening there. They lost the contract this time last year with ENEO, which is we're talking Cameroon here. They lost the contract to for the power station there, and I mean, a typical African nation where, you know, they didn't lose it to somebody else. The government just stopped doing it and put blackouts and everything else. But they announced the other day that at the end of December, the contract was re-signed. And they've announced today, actually, that after quite a good update anyway, then they've announced today that in January, so far, production is up 91%. Effectively, the power station has been switched on. It still works. And it's double. It's using double the, obviously, the amount that they were selling before. So, you know, people who worried that Victoria Oil and Gas was game over, you know, they've learned their lesson that they don't want a single client taking 53% of their gas or their business.
Mm-hmm.
So over the last year, they have spent a lot of time increasing their work and their sales to their industrial customers, and the industrial customers have been equally naffed off that they were getting blackouts and so on. So they're taking gas which is being delivered to the factory, the side of the road next to the factory. So they're not just using it for heating and that sort of stuff. They're using it for local power generation as well. And they've got a number of other opportunities opening up. So, you know, Victoria Oil and Gas lost a lot of trust in the last 18 months, but they have got fantastic gas production, the gas field. They've got the distribution network with the pipelines and the pipes through Douala, which is the major port town of Cameroon. They've signed the Mutanda and agreement at long last, which gives them another massive gas field in due course. If you're prepared to give a company another go, I think that VOG might be one of them.
Sure, I'm looking back, scroll back in my daily chart at the share price there. It's at, as far as I can scroll back in the daily for a time frame, which is back to 2010, 2009, they are an all-time low pretty much at the moment, aren't they?
So, yeah.
they hit 15 pence or just about 15 pence. They rallied off that, really oversold there, rallied off that to 25 pence, and they come back down to 17 pence. So we'll see whether they retest that low, because that could be that actually, you know, could be, I don't want to speak early here, but it could be a bottom there.
No, no, I mean, we've all had our fingers burnt on this one before, and I believed it, and probably should have cut it the moment they lost that contract. It took them a lot longer than I thought. There was a presidential election last year. You know how things go in Africa. If there's a presidential election, he decides what goes and what doesn't go. And I just thought that the gas would come in sooner than this. But I don't know. As you know, I don't invest in these things myself. But But I'll be having a very, very careful look at VAG right now. Oh. As you say, down to, what, 17p?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Marvellous stuff. Cheers to that, Malky. And we'll catch up next week, fella.
All right. Look forward to it.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Union Jack Oil, UJO. At four, MOD Resources, MOD, ticker there. I think a bit of a takeover bid, wasn't it? I think news out. I saw that somewhere on Twitter, I'm sure it did. At three, Chesterfield Resources, CHF, I think ticker there. At two, GCM Resources. And the number one most followed company on Vox Markets is Bidstack Group, BIDS. I did a video on that company over the weekend. It's an update. They did an end-of-year update, and it's all looking good there. Of course, in the massive area of gaming, and they are advertising within games, and it seems like it's going to be a very... Well, it's surprising how big gaming is, and yet how underrepresented it is in the advertising space, you know? So I think lots of people are trying to take advantage of this. But game is massive, and I can't see it slowing down either. It's a very interesting sector. Okay, top five most liked RNSs come from at five, Audioboom, trading update. At four, Hurricane Energy, operational update. At three, there it is, MOD Resources, 15 million capital raise and non-binding offer received by MOD. At two, Harvest Minerals, new corporate website, and number one, update on securing offtake prepayment finance. That's from Vast Resources. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.